So the title of tonight's talk and our discussion is Stopping and Dropping. Last week we talked about waves and rhythms and harmonics and all life being waves and rhythms, and sometimes we're in tune and sometimes we're not. Sometimes we're really following the wave of desire. Sometimes we're right smack in the middle of it. Very active, these waves. So I thought about stopping. And the benefit of stopping in practice and stepping out and watching the waves go by. And today I had a great chance to do that. It was really very wonderful to sit in this temperature today. Mm-hmm. Anybody else have the day with some space to be outside? Yeah, it was warm.
Day.
It was a beautiful day. Warm. My backyard is green, and my body is home after 4 weeks gone to Sweden, and I'm really appreciating the sun. As I said last week, in Sweden, there wasn't much of it this year, so it's so nice to sit outside and stop. I also thought of stopping because I was remembering a time when I was with the women from the meditation sangha that I teach, two sanghas in prison at FCI Dublin. And I went one day and asked everybody what they loved. What do you love? And I heard about what everybody loved. And then I asked people what they'd learned while being inside. Definitely not from what have you learned from this experience? But really, you know, what are you learning here? And these are some of the things that they said. What do you love? They love the sky, family and friends, more than before. Being outside, being myself, being able to study the Bible. A lot of people with a Christian background who come to the Buddhist meditation class without conflict. What have you learned? I asked. They learned about change. They said everything's changing all the time in prison. Just when they feel like things are settled, everything changed. And I thought of Mindy, this woman who's been there since I've been going to Dublin for the last 4 or 5, 6 years, I can't remember. And Mindy's been there, she's been the mainstay. She's the person who maintains the chapel and has a really deep Catholic background and practice and a deep meditation practice too. And I was really sad just before I went to Sweden because I heard that Mindy had left. I mean, I'm happy for Mindy, but she didn't go home yet. And she was going to be transferred closer to LA where her family lived. And then, and I knew she was ambivalent about the move because she's been here for a while and feels somewhat stable. But then I got another email that said that this really talks to the way changes happen in prison. She was scheduled to leave and on a Friday, and the last meditation group that she'd be able to go to is on Thursday. And every time somebody leaves, there's a real ritual of saying goodbye to people that everyone values. And Tuesday night, they woke Mindy up at 3 and said, time to go, time to go. So there was no ritual goodbye. There was no saying goodbye. It makes all of us sad that we couldn't say goodbye to her. And that's the way changes happen, like that, in prison. And it happens like that here. We aren't usually aware of it. Like right now, it's not noisy. It's not cold. Change. Saying no. What have they learned? They learned to say no. Couldn't say no before. And I think that's something to really reflect on. For some of us, I've said this here before, but for some of us, saying yes is the same thing as saying no. For those of us who say no to everything, remind me of a phone call I got today from somebody, and we spoke for about a half hour about a New Year to Live group and his interest in it, talked about it, and he's really excited, and we're getting off the phone, and I said, I think I asked, because he had said he really wanted to do it, and then when he was saying goodbye, I said, so, you really want to do it? He said, well, I'm going to think about it, and then he said, no, I'm really going to do it. He said, that's the way I do things, you know, not because I don't want to do it, I really want to do it, but fear's here. There's some fear here. So I'm going to say yes. And some of us say yes to everything this week. Anybody say anything? Okay, who's a yes sayer? Put your hand way up. Who's a no sayer? Yeah.
What do you mean, like a yes sayer? Like yes to what?
To everything that comes your way. Well.
I know my default position is I'll say yes. Mm-hmm. And to some degree that's conscious, in that when I was raising our daughter, I made a rule that I would say yes to her unless there was a really good reason to say no. Mm-hmm. And then I would have no problem saying no. And with her it was easier to say no when I needed to, but in other areas of my life, like with my husband, I don't always say no when I need to, mm-hmm. or when it would be better for me to. Mm-hmm. My default position is yes. I want the things to flow smoothly, and so I say yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I said no this week, and I was real tempted to say yes to teaching on Thursday nights for 8 weeks, or maybe Tuesday night, but I'm already teaching Tuesday night. You know, it's like, it's not always easy to say no. So these women have learned to say no. Something that they've learned is not trying to impress. One woman talked about not wearing makeup anymore. They're just not trying to impress. You know, one thing reminds you of another thing. That reminds me of somebody I knew when I lived in Inverness, and she said that her niece came to visit. She walked around the streets and she said, you know, there's just something weird about this place. She said, everybody looks like they just got out of bed. Not trying to impress. Not always buying. I have a friend who told me that she buys something every day. Every day she buys something. So think about that. Not buying things. Though the store at the prison is very busy, but not as much as it used to be for everybody. One woman told me that Mindy said that before she was in prison, she was always buying things and sending them to the Philippines. Couldn't stop buying and sending. Very generous woman, very generous. And she, at first, in prison, had to stop making quilts. She made so many quilts, her daughter said no more. But, you know, the doing something, buying, making, doing, stopping. The thing that they said that they really have learned is the value of having time, more time. That they were always so busy that they never stopped. So they're the inspiration of this talk on stopping and dropping. Dropping. You ever just drop everything? That's what Sweden was like. Sun came out, you dropped everything. You know, it was precious, very precious. They said that they were always so busy on the outside that they never had time to just be. So these are good reflections for all of us. Always filled every moment with doing something. Now they had time to walk around the track, listen to the birds. There are a lot of birds up there. Someone told me that she went from hating the birds when she first got there because they were so noisy to loving the birds just by being with the birds and noticing their movements and their calling. Watching the weather change. I talked to, or I emailed somebody back and forth yesterday, who I know, who's a very busy guy. He's a surgeon and a dancer and a meditator and a partner and a dad of three kids. Busy guy. And I had encouraged him to go through the mindfulness-based stress reduction series. Not the series, but the training with Jon Kabat-Zinn in March, because he was really interested in bringing mindfulness, the formal 8-week series, to Kaiser in Richmond, I think, or a medical clinic in Richmond. So he did that, and he wrote and he said he wanted to talk to me about it because he decided not to teach it there because he was too busy. And I was really impressed because I know this guy is really busy. And he was asking if I knew anybody who might want to teach there, maybe even get funds for doing it. I was really impressed. It's like, all right, this guy is learning to stop. So how do we find balance? That's a big, huge question. Balance, that place on the teeter-totter. The seesaw. Balance. How do you find balance in your life? Anyone find balance in their life?
Like, you can't practice anything that's related to the Asian traditions of medicine and consciousness without being very aware of the effect of balance on a life, the way you live a life. And it's very hard.
Mm-hmm.
You have to have a very deep intention. It's almost like a dance, and you have to have a very deep intention to know when to move and when to slow down. And when to stop, and when it's too much and it's too little. It's really a practice. It seems to me it's an ongoing practice. And the flow of the culture is completely, you're running against the flow of the culture.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's a busyness to everything. And Larry Dossey writes a wonderful book on time, space, and medicine, and he talks about hurry sickness.
Mm-hmm.
And it's real, where people just get so involved with the clock and with beating the clock that they become ill. And that happened to me in the 80s when I was running a business. And I would say that it's a big environmental problem for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Primarily because there's so much energy being shot through the air with wireless technology,
mm-hmm.
that you can't really not be affected by it. It used to be there were radio towers, and those are the only signals out there. But now there's all the technology, and it's being shot through the air, and then you're either using a cell phone or using a computer. That's part of what's keeping you out of balance.
Mm-hmm.
Stimulating and coming at you at a rhythm. So I
could go on and on about mm-hmm. it. And the reason I could is that I work with a lot of people privately, in private practice, who just simply cannot stop going from too much here to too little there, and just finding that way.
Mm. Thank you. Yeah, it's very hard, very challenging. I met someone I know today walking our dogs. Mm-hmm. For those of you who know that I have a dog named Obi, whose real name is O'Brien himself, named after my father. He met a friend today, and it's nice to meet a friend. He made a new friend. Can't remember what I was going to say about the friend's person, though. So if she comes back to my mind in our story, I'll go back to it, but I can't remember it at all right now. The way of the mind, yeah? Okay, so this constant going is feeding the seeds of suffering. It's really feeding this busy, did you say busy sickness?
Hurry sickness.
Hurry sickness. Is anyone familiar with that? No one here? Hurry sickness. Where does it hit you in the body?
When you go to bed at night and you can't sleep.
Where else? Yep, there you go. Yep. How about here? Anyone?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Here?
Back of the neck.
Yeah. Back of the neck. Anyone have atlas shoulders? So it hits the body, hits the mind, it hits the subtle body. It has to hit our well-being. So strong intention to stop those messages through the air of text messaging. You know, last year I went to Ireland, and you know, in Ireland, everybody goes out to the pubs. Anyone been to Ireland? Yeah, everyone's out at the pubs. You know, kids and adults, drinking, non-drinking, music. It's really fun. And I really was aware of people all around me text messaging. It's like, now this is really bizarre. You know, it's like text messaging. You know, doing one thing and not being there. Someone I recently was talking to was talking about, you know, being with somebody, text messaging next to them, and like, are you there with that person or not? Doing. Always doing. You've heard that expression. Are you a human being or a human doing? Have you heard that? Okay.
One of the teachers at one of the spring Vipassana retreats, I forget who it was, talked about our tendency to engage life like this, mm-hmm. that we're moving so fast and so many directions, but we lean into life. Mm. And she gave everybody the instruction, just sit back and open your shoulders. Mm. And the palpable change is quite remarkable. Mm-hmm. It was just interesting and revealing, because when you make that movement, you really realize how much we are leaning into the moment or the next moment.
To sit back. You feel it? You don't want to distance yourself. I want to be in life.
Yeah. Well, one of the things you pointed out is life is coming at you, whether you're leaning forward or not. Mm-hmm. If you just open up and accept it, it's more comfortable.
Mm. The waves of life are coming back. But sometimes it's worth stepping out of the stream and watching them.
There's also I always think of so much of the Buddha when I think of how there's so much sensei coming in that we become adrenaline addicted, stimulated. We're so stimulated. And when you make the effort to try to stop, someone will come to me and they've gotten a cancer diagnosis or something that just smacked right into them. That they're almost going through withdrawal from all of the busyness in their physical body before they can actually begin to be quiet and centered. Mm-hmm. So it's it's palpable in all of our bodies at this point.
Stop being an intention to stop. I remember what the person I met said. She said that she had made a strong intention to sit at the same time in the morning and the night for 15 minutes. And that was a real difference in her life. And what it made such a difference in her life with the commitment to do that, to actually put the time down and do it, stopping. Very new for her. I've known her for a while. Some people think that stopping and taking time out to meditate, to just be present with whatever it is, one thing, is selfish. What do you think? A lot of people think it's selfish. How can I take time for me?
I think it's necessary and essential.
Anyone feel, yeah, please, more?
I was just thinking about stopping. For me coming here tonight and making a commitment to come after thinking about it and thinking I was going to come in June, is that stopping?
So when we stop by coming here, thanking ourselves for doing that, you ever recognize that? That you've taken some time to just stop? Today, when I was sitting outside and feeling the temperature, I mean, you know, in sun, but admit it, I hit the face, but you know, in the sun, just loving it. Feeling such joy and aliveness and just feeling the sun on my body, on this fathom-long body, that the Buddha said, it's all we need, this one body, to wake up. Everything's right here in the body. So we've got all the tools. And oftentimes what makes us stop is suffering, is that diagnosis that you mentioned, or the chronic insomnia, or X, Y, Z. I'm sure many of us can relate to that, whatever that is, as a first cause, first condition of stopping. And sometimes it's really hard to stop because those waves can be really painful. Sometimes the waves of in silence include things we don't want to look at in our lives. They include grief that we haven't expressed. I know for me that's been very true in my meditation practice, getting in touch with grief from my childhood that I had never even known was there. Kind of shocking when you realize what you carry around on you, in you, here, there. That's why I love the soft belly practice that Stephen Levine recommends. You know, it could just as easily be the breath, because the breath is pretty consistent, something to pay attention to. You know, the soft belly practice is really a hard belly practice. It's telling us when there's a hard belly and reminding us, reminding, which is key, to breathe into the belly, not up here, that feeds our anxiety. It feeds our anxiety, but bringing it down to the place where we first breathed. You know, every one of us were what is called obligate belly breathers. Obligate belly breathers. We were born breathing with our bellies. You know, this is a respiratory therapist. We were born, I was a respiratory therapist. You know, but we've forgotten how to do that. And when you breathe it in the belly, of course we don't really breathe in the belly, but in a way we do. Those of us who have mind-body practices, yoga practices, know when someone says, no, bring the breath into the belly. We can do that. Or bring the breath into the, as I instruct people in when practicing a body scan, when I teach mindfulness-based stress reduction, bring the breath now into the left me. First, people think I'm crazy, and it's really a hard thing to get, because it's not a thing, it's a way of experiencing. I don't know how else to say that, the way of experiencing. So the belly, bringing the breath into the belly, helps us to really be present with what's there. And sometimes what's there, if we check in there on the way out the door when we're going to work, and it's the thing that says, okay, stop. But oftentimes we don't listen. We just don't listen. Instead of stopping, I won't say what ways we don't stop when the body's saying stop. What ways do you not stop? What do you do instead?
Speed up.
Speed up. Who said that? Okay, speed up. Speed up. When you're feeling tired and the body says stop, you speed up. What helps you to speed up?
Coffee.
Yes. You know, I don't think it's any accident that methamphetamine is called speed, right? It's a speed. It's all these things that we use for speed. Text messaging, to be in constant contact, that you're not with the person you're with somebody else. And nothing wrong with technology. It's like a lot of gratitude for what technology brings, a lot of gratitude. In this area of mindfulness-based stress reduction, we call the things that we do instead of stopping maladaptive coping techniques. Very formal. Maladaptive. They include drinking and overwatching TV, and I mean, we can go on and on about them. Instead of just stopping, it's hard to stop. It's hard to stop. If you're running and just stop, you're going to fall over. That's not balance. Sometimes we have to slow down first. That momentum, forward momentum that you mentioned, keeps us going for a while, so that when we do stop and sit with our eyes closed, boy, there can be a lot of revving going on. Revving. Anyone have a quiet thought stream tonight? Moments. Also, some noticing of thoughts. Any emotions coming in and out? It's the way it is. But when we stop, we can sit back and see them, know them. It's not like we're trying to shut them off. If there's joy, don't shut it off. You know, if there's sadness, don't shut it off. Feel it. That's a really a tricky place for a lot of people in practice. I don't want to feel this anymore. I am tired of feeling this sadness. I am tired of feeling this grief. Yet, it's there. It's there. It's there. So the recognizing of it without clamping down here. You know, here. Here's where we clamp down to life a lot. Here. We're talking about the ways we do. Maybe if we were a little friendlier, they wouldn't hold us so much in their grip. You ever be in the grip of something? Yeah, we all have been. My daughter once said, when she was really in the grip of anger, of a story of he did this to me, and it's been all this time and I'm still, you know, she said it's just like a dog with a bloody bone. We all know that. The dog with a bloody bone can't put it down. Unless you're Obi, he'd bury it. And he'd bring it back to me a month later. But most of us can't put it down. So the stopping, let's just see what's there. Pain, you know, it's like, how can we How can we be kind to ourselves? That's the bottom line. The Dalai Lama's got it right. And he says his religion is kindness. If you've ever seen him, it oozes from him. So our religion, for lack of another word, which I know is a very charged word, but I like Sylvia Boorstein's definition I once heard, which was re-ligament, bring back together again. Re-ligament is kindness. This is a practice of kindness. Yet sometimes when we sit, what comes up feels like one insult after another. One thought judgment, emotion judgment. We feed the fire of suffering with judging, with fighting what is. And it's a habit. Such compassion for all these habits. We've learned them for however many years we are. And the good news is we're learning new habits every time we put our butt down or our knees down. Learning the habit of being able to sit with the truth of the moment. The truth of the moment. Whatever we find, we don't sit coming from a retreat. You may have noticed that you don't just sit down and be quiet there. There's so much coming and going. But after a while, there's a settling down. Yeah? And that settling is such water on the flames of pain. From the Tao Te Ching, if you want to become full, let yourself be empty. If you want to be reborn, let yourself die. Some of us have fear that when we sit, what we may come up to is emptiness. The feeling for some people that really brings fear, equated with What words?
Anxiety.
Panic.
Hopelessness.
What other words for emptiness?
Abyss.
What other words for emptiness?
Annihilation.
Fear with that word? Anyone? Or not? Other words for emptiness?
Potential.
Relief.
What else?
Openness.
Peace.
Unstuckedness. Unvelcroed. Unvelcroed. It's like we have hooks. You know, that's what octopi have. They have, it's not the arms, it's the little suction cups all over the body that get you if you're wrapped in one. So emptiness is, as James Barris has said, just the other side of the coin. It's no different than here-ness, now, this body. It's the other side of the coin. It's nothing special. It's ordinary. Yet, if you ever touch it, and there's that release, or even extinguishment from the flames of selfing, there's a deep understanding of both, I'd say, the potential of the moment to wake up. It's right here, right now, it's no place else, and it's all the time, right here. Every time we stop, there's that potential of even sitting with the pain, the grief, the freedom. Whatever we find is a real act of love. It's a bottom line, it's an act of love, and it takes a lot of courage. So walking in the door tonight, stopping, you have to thank yourself, because it's the biggest gift, I think, that we can give ourselves is this gift of the Dharma, which is really the truth that we come to see when we sit and notice the workings of the mind, of mind. Emptiness form. If you want to become full, let yourself be empty. Full of love, full of compassion, full of kindness, giving. If you want to be reborn, let yourself die. Extinguishment, let yourself die. There's freedom there. Like, oh, sometimes Bonnie gets very tiring. Very tiring. More to this one than to you. Maybe. All form is empty. Are there any, this is a real question, are there any empty spaces on your calendar? What do you feel when you see that?
That I forgot something.
That you forgot something. You know, I always start the Year to Live groups with the strong look at intentions. You know, everything starts with intention. It's a really important place to touch in with what are our intentions. So we start with intentions, writing intentions. They change, but it's a good starting place. And I have to, and I always, but often at least, remind people that it's not a to-do list. It's not a to-do list that you're writing. Wow, if you had a year to live, or a day to live, or a moment to live, what are your intentions? It's really, and when I ask people that, you know, are you writing a to-do list? It stops people, because very often it is a to-do list. I want to clean out this, I want to write this, I want to do this. Intention can come with doing. Not to get confused, oh, with that beautiful line from Pablo Neruda, in keeping silent, I don't want this to be confused with inactivity. I want no truck with death, the stopping. I want no truck with death, he says. Just to stop. But I like this Tao Te Ching, the reborn, to be reborn. You have to die. You know, the heart stops every time it beats. It rests. It stops. Every, that fraction, what is it? Point, do you remember?
Yeah, I don't either.
But it does, right?
Yeah.
Every heartbeat. And if it doesn't, we're in trouble. Definitely. It's so wise, it stops. So it's a guide. You know, the heart completely opened at our birth. With the first breath, the whole circulation changed and the heart opened. That's pretty amazing. So we're born with an open heart. We're born with an open heart. And life comes in. So this practice of stopping is a practice of opening our hearts. I have a poem. Called Camas Lilies from this book called Sabbath, Finding Rest, Renewal, and Delight in Our Busy Life. It's really a nice book. A friend gave it to me. Consider the lilies of the field, the blue banks of camas opening into acres of sky along the road. Would the longing to lie down and be washed by that beauty abate if you knew their usefulness? How the natives ground their bulbs for flower? How the settlers' hogs uprooted them, grunting in gleeful oblivion as the flowers fell? And you, what of your rushed and useful life? Imagine setting it all down. Papers, plans, appointments, everything. Leaving only a note, gone to the fields to be lovely. Be back when I'm through with blooming. Even now, unneeded and uneaten, the camas lilies gaze out above the grass from their tender blue eyes. Even in sleep, your life will shine. Make no mistake. Of course your work will always matter. Of course, your work will always matter. Yet Solomon, in all his glory, was not arrayed like one of these. The word drop is used in Dzogchen practice, and Dzogchen practice is a non-dual practice from the Vajrayana lineage of Buddhism, the Tibetan path. The practice of dropping really means dropping yourself. Would you say that? Dropping yourself. And the view that comes with this extraordinary dropping is words are luminous.
Well, yeah, the only thing I could think of when you said that was the little hand gesture.
Yeah.
You know, turning your our view is usually out like this. And it's asked me to just turn the view around. So what you're seeing is really awareness itself that's not tainted by all the stories and stuff that usually get in the way.
And no one's home.
And no one's home. I was thinking of a little while ago when we were talking about emptiness, about that Rumi poem. I think it's a Rumi poem where he says something like, what I want most is to leap apart from myself and then to stand aside even from the leaping. I've lived too long where I can be reached. I'm not quoting exactly right, but I know the last line's right. I've lived too long where I can be reached. Mm-hmm. But that sense of stepping outside of yourself and then even letting go of that act of the stepping, letting there just be.
Mm-hmm. It's the other side of the coin. Isn't another side of the coin. There is just the coin. It's just the coin. And it's free and it's busy. And here we are. Here we are, seeing the world through these eyes that separate everything into me and you and subject and object. And occasionally, whether it's through a esoteric and simple and beautiful practice that takes simply being present after a lot of practice, of years of sitting, that train the mind to let go. Wouldn't you say? Just drop and let go.
But I think part of the essence of that Dzogchen practice is that it's really accessible. It doesn't have to be complicated. Yeah. But it is that it's the essence of stopping. It's just, you know, it's just instead of having to add a lot of stories to things, if you come back to that idea of the stories that we usually live by, that you just can stop mediating your experience and let it be the direct sensory experience. And that brings you right into the present moment.
Mm-hmm.
And there's nothing else that needs to be done right there.
Mm-hmm.
A word that comes up a lot in I'm reading The Wings of Awakening, by, that's written by Tansarvi, is unfabricated.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, he's actually using it as the word for nirvana. But that's so clear to me, that unfabricated, we're not making anything up.
Mm-hmm.
It's just being with what really is.
Unfabricated. I like that word, don't you? We go around fabricating a lot. Fabricate, isn't that an interesting word? What does that mean? Isn't that a funny word? Fabricate. Is there a fabricated word?
Yeah.
Or is it just unfabricated?
Yeah.
I mean, I get unfabricated.
Stories.
Making them up.
Yeah.
Weaving together. Yeah?
Making up our view of reality.
Mm-hmm.
I was interested in what Deb was talking about. Somebody gifted me the latest Dalai Lama book, and it's about the great perfection in Dzogchen practice. And it's subtitled "The Mind in Comfort and Ease," and it's such a clear, simple book. It is so simple that it just knocks you over. If anyone's interested in practicing Dzogchen, which I have been on and off through the years, it seems like no big deal. Just no big deal. But the idea that it brings comfort and ease. Speaks to everything you said tonight,
mm-hmm.
about the world that we're in and how important it is to stop. And anyway, I recommend the book. It's just a wonderful book.
Simplicity. I think I've said before, Sylvia Borstein's title of her first book, right? It's Easier Than You Think. Great book. How many people have read that book? A lot of people have read that book. A lot of people. It's easier than you think. The Buddha's path to happiness. Think, right? She said that she could just as easily have called it, and it's harder than you'll ever know. We got to put the butt down. And that takes heart. You know, we could call it intention, but it's heart, yes? So, any questions, comments, we need to be out of this room at 9:15, and it's about 9:03, so we have time for, yeah.
Movement to all being is a notion or an intention that Paul Halloran had expressed in meditation settings that I was in. That has been very meaningful to me.
Move into all being.
Move into all being. It's an interesting thought.
Yeah.
And it's like, I think it begins with awareness of self-absorption.
Mm.
And you can think of it in terms of exchanging self for other. And, but the simplicity of that phrase is something that has been meaningful to me.
Mm.
And I think it's like esotericism. I was speaking with a Muslim who was aware of Sufism and everything, and he wanted to know if I knew anything about that. And I didn't, but if he was thinking of it as like being in heaven on earth.
Mm.
It's like a transcendence or something. You can move into all being.
Mm-hmm. It's all here right now.
Yeah.
It's all here right now. All here right now. Concepts of heaven, hell, heaven, purgatory, limbo, those are gone. But they're all, have you experienced those here? Anyone gone to heaven here in this life? Hell? We've experienced them here. It's all here, not someplace else. Nirvana is not someplace at all. It's all here, right now. And there's a stillness right in the center of it all. And we can find it when we pay attention. And I think that's what this is. This practice is all about, paying attention. What else? Anyone? Anything?
Did you say that doing is feeding the suffering? Is that what you said?
It can be. It can be. It can be if what we're doing is causing us suffering. I don't know that I use those exact words, but feeding suffering is really when we are locked in greed, aversion, and delusion. So if what we are doing is related to greed, aversion, not seeing clearly, it feeds all the seeds of suffering. It waters, and they grow the seeds.
I think we're referring to the text messaging.
Yeah. Okay. It can be. I think it can be.
So are you calling the text messaging greed or aversion? Aversion, maybe?
I don't know what I would call it. I don't text message. I don't have experience with it, other than standing next to people in a pub in Ireland. I think it can be a wonderful vehicle to communicate with people. It can be really fast. You can get a message across without having to interrupt everybody. But I think it's when anything is carried to an extreme, anything is feeding suffering.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, extremism of any. In any philosophy, religious system, either end looks the same. either end of any religion looks the same. Does that make sense?
Just if the word addiction popped into my mind, when it becomes that.
Yeah.
I think that's when it becomes destructive.
Yeah. I really think email can be an addiction for many people. Anybody ever feel that pull?
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah.
I have a teenage granddaughter who got addicted to the computer, and there's a whole psychological category for it now. Mm-hmm. And when she comes to my home, I have to take the board and hide it, because she really is having a really hard time.
Mm-hmm.
And she's got in company of people who are in the same boat.
Yeah. I'm telling you, it was calling to me today out there in the sun. It was. Bonnie. I'm dinging.
It sounds like what you've been talking about. This is a great not stopping. Finding a place to stop is really up for me for the last 20 years. and so it seems like not stopping is suffering. Mm-hmm. It's that sort of carrying that to an extreme. And for me, there's a sense of, I have a sense of purpose that gets intertwined with going on. And so when I do find room to stop, when I start slowing down, it's, there's this uselessness that begins mm-hmm. to come up.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. It's really hard to see. I don't think it's true, but that's what my mind is saying. It's like, well, you're worthless if you're not gone. You don't have this sense of, this drive, this sense of purpose. And, Many years ago, I had a job in a store here in Berkeley, and the owner of the store was very old. And he would come to work. He didn't need to be at work. His children were running the business. And he would come to work, and he would just walk up and down the aisle all day. Mm-hmm. And he had that just sort of leaning forward. And it just affected me so strongly. You know, mm-hmm. And I realize now that I was seeing myself, you know, in him. It's hard to stop. And I think for me, you asked about finding balance. And one thing that really helps to find that place between going and stopping for me is being outside, and being in nature, and being reminded of the beauty, and mm-hmm. having to stop to see it.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. And oftentimes, it's wrapped around our identity. Mm-hmm. Oftentimes, our identity, you know, is not an accident that very often when people retire, there's a fear of, like, who am I? That's a big question, you know. That's what we're looking at here. Who am I? Who am I? One more.
Well, my sister's reflecting on actually two different cultures. One, the Brahma Kumaris, who have a practice of, they call it traffic control. So every 2 hours there's a bell. And for 10 minutes, they just meditate or reflect or know what they're doing. But that's 10 minutes, every 2 hours. I sat there thinking, okay, I wonder if you had that long on your watch if you do it. And then again, I'm thinking, I've just been with my part of my family is a Muslim family. They pray 5 times a day, mm-hmm. so they really stop. You know, that's just part of the day. Mm-hmm. You don't do that so much, I think, here mm-hmm. in this culture. Mm-hmm.
Thank you. So let's stop and sit. So give yourself fully these last moments. See if you can. Just let go here. No need to be out the door yet. Feel the body. Let the breath breathe the body. And see if you can appreciate yourself for coming out here tonight, for doing something and stopping. May we go our separate ways, remembering to stop. May we find peace in our hearts. May the world remember peace. May the merit from our practice together tonight be of benefit to all beings everywhere, without exception. May all beings be free.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.